Zecher Nishmas, my grandmother, Mrs. Toby Avson, Zecher Levracha, Chaya Toba Mindel, Vassar of Avraham Yitzchak. In Shir 38, we are going to be discussing the mitzvah of Bikurim, the first fruit. This mitzvah applies only in Eretz Yisrael, and only when the Beis HaMikdash is in existence, so there's really no reason for us to discuss it from a practical standpoint. However, the underlying ideas are important, and therefore we're going to discuss these ideas. So the first two psukim are actually exactly the same. The first one comes from Shemos 23:19, the second one comes from 34:26, and those psukim read, Reishis bikurean masicha tavi beis Hashem elokecha, lo sivashel gidi b'chalivimo. So the second part of the pasuk we've discussed before, but the first part is what concerns us now. And the translation is, bring the first fruits of your land to the temple of God, your Lord. And now we're going to move on to Devarim 26, 1 through 15. So we have a series of psukim here, and I'm going to read the English directly. So when you come to the land that God your Lord is giving you as a heritage, occupying and settling it, you shall take the first of every fruit of the ground produced by the land that God your God is giving you. You must place it in a basket and go to the site that God will choose as the place associated with his name. There you shall go to the priest officiating at the time and say to him, Today I am affirming to God your Lord that I have come to the land that God swore to our fathers to give us. The priest shall then take the basket from your hand and place it before the altar of God your Lord. You shall then make the following declaration before God your Lord. My ancestor was a homeless Aramean. He went to Egypt with a small number of men and lived there as an immigrant. But it was there that he became a great, powerful, and populous nation. The Egyptians were cruel to us, making us suffer and imposing harsh slavery on us. We cried out to God, Lord of our ancestors, and God heard our voice, seeing our suffering, our harsh labor, and our distress. God then brought us out of Mitzrayim with a strong hand and an outstretched arm, with great visions and with signs and miracles. He brought us to this area, giving us this land flowing with milk and honey. I am now bringing the first fruit to the land that God has given me. With that you shall set the basket down before God your Lord, and you shall then bow down before God your Lord. You, the Levi, and the Ger in your midst, shall thus rejoice in all the good that God your Lord has granted you and your family. So now we begin a new section, which is the declaration for removing Meiser, called Vidui Meiser. When you have finished taking all the tithes of your grain for the third year, which is the special tithe year, you must give them to the Levi and to the foreigner, orphan, and widow, so that they will eat their fill in your settlements. You must then make the following declaration before God your Lord. I have removed all the sacred portions from my house. I have given the appropriate ones to the Levi and to the orphan and widow, following all the commandments you prescribed to us. I have not violated your commandment and have forgotten nothing. I have not eaten the second tithe while in mourning. I have not separated any of it while unclean, and I have not used any for the dead. I have obeyed you, God my Lord, and have done all that you commanded me. Look down from your holy habitation in heaven and bless your people Yisrael and the land that you have given us, the land flowing with milk and honey, that you swore to our fathers. That was a lot, so just to summarize, the first two psukim are exactly the same. They command us to bring the choicest first fruit to the Mikdash, and the third group was comprised of two parts. So the first being the description and presentation of these fruits when they are brought, and right after that we have an account of Vidui Meiser, which we are going to discuss later. Although the words themselves, Vidui Meiser, are difficult to translate, we can say the affirmation or the declaration that Meiser was properly given, and Diane Grunfeld translates it as the avowal of the tithes. So more on this later. So let's begin with a discussion of the halachos related to Bikurim. Bikurim only applies to the seven fruits that the land of Israel is praised for, and this includes wheat, barley, figs, grapes, pomegranates, olives, and honey dates. It does not apply to any other produce. Furthermore, only the best of these fruits can be brought, and this excludes produce that grows in the mountains and deep valley areas, since this type of produce is considered of a lesser quality. In ancient times, these seven fruits were used as units of weights and measures in international trade, and Eretz Yisrael seems to be the original home of the olive tree. So I tried to look into that, and I was not able to find anything conclusive about it. Bikurim is the first item that needs to be separated for an offering to God, and all other gifts that we have mentioned, such as Truma, Maaser Rishon, and Maaser Sheni, all need to be given in a specific order. Bikurim shares characteristics of Maaser Sheni, and therefore the Kohen may not eat of them if they are Tame or if he is Tame. The Kohen may eat Bikurim only after they are placed on the Mizbeach, and they may only be consumed in Yerushalayim. Bikurim are also called three other names by the Torah. They are called Bikurei Ma'asecha, the first fruit of your work, Tirumas Yadicha, the offering of your hand, and Mileasicha, the fullness of your harvest. So the term Mileasicha implies that the mitzvah of Bikurim comes into effect as soon as the fruits are ripe, even before touching the produce in the field. And we could contrast this to Truma, where the opposite is true. Truma comes into effect after the harvest and the work belonging to it had been completed, and this is called Gemar Melachticha. We could say that the command of Bikurim is incurred when nature has completed its work, and Truma comes into effect when man has completed his work. The gathering of the Bikurim from the tree or the ground, or according to Rabbeinu Tam, taking the fruit out of your house and then bringing them to the Mikdash, needs to be done by the same individual. If the fruit are lost by the owner, then they need to be replaced. There is no minimum requirement from the Torah in terms of the quantity that one should bring, but our Chacham set up that the minimum should be 1/60th of the harvest fruits. Bringing Bikurim was done publicly. It began at the time of Shavuos and lasted through the summer. It was considered a joyous time with the whole Jewish nation living on its soil in the Holy Land. So here is a description of the Bikurim process, which is based on the Mishnah in Bikurim. The first ripe fruit that the farmer noticed was marked and dedicated as a first fruit to express gratitude for the soil and the blessing given by Hashem to enable him to carry out the laws of the Torah. The country was divided into 24 districts called Ma'amados. The people would gather outside the main town in their district and stay there for the night. In the morning, the watchman would call out the words written in Yirmiyahu 31:5, Kumu v'na'alet Tzion el Hashem Elokeinu, arise and let us go up to Tzion, to Hashem our God. So those who lived nearby would bring green figs and grapes. Those who lived far away would bring dried figs and raisins. The fruit was brought in decorated willow baskets, and those that were rich brought the fruit in gold baskets. Music would be played for the people as they went up, and an ox, which would be sacrificed, also preceded them. The horns of the ox had gold on it, and they placed a crown of olive leaves on its head. When they neared Yerushalayim, they sent out messengers and decorated their fruit. Kohanim and other officials in the Mikdash came out to meet them. People would stop their work in order to go greet those going up, and they would say to them, Brothers, men of whatever city they came from, you are welcome, enter in peace. The flute was played as they ascended, and the king would come out to greet them. The king himself would take a basket and carry it on his shoulder. Finally, when they arrived, the Levim would sing to them from Psalm 30, Aramimcha Hashem ki dili sani, lo simachta o yevayli. Okay, so the next part is the Bikurim declaration. Each person would place his basket on his shoulder and recite the declaration that we mentioned from Devarim 26. Through his testimony, the farmer is saying that he possesses the land that Hashem promised us, and that so many years ago his ancestor was a servant to Lavan, how the fate of his ancestors had deteriorated to the point where they were slaves to Mitzrayim, how God delivered them, led them to the Torah, and gave them the land which flows with milk and honey. The procedure of Tenufa was then done, And this means that the Kohen would wave the fruits in a specified manner and place them on the Mizbeach, and the individual would then bow and leave the Mikdash. This declaration needs to be studied. Diane Grunfeld writes that it should be read and reread by every Jew who wants to understand the essence of Israel's nationhood, the true relationship between God, the people of Israel, and the land of Israel, and finally, the all-important relationship between faith and the history of Judaism. In this declaration, we proclaim our early history, the lesson a faithful Jew should learn from this history concerning our task as individuals, and the role of the Jewish people as an instrument of God's purpose in history. This declaration is what the Pesach Haggadah is based on. During the Seder, we have the unique opportunity to teach the next generation about divine guidance, our purpose and mission that the Jewish people have in the world. Shavuos and the season of Bikurim coincide, and there is a connection between Bikurim and Shavuos in terms of Matan Torah. Bikurim are brought to the Mikdash, which is the home, so to say, of the Torah, since the Sefer Torah resides in the Kodesh HaKadoshim under the Keruvim. The idea being expressed is that every grain and fruit that ripens in the land are not only a means to our physical sustenance, but also to realize the purpose of God's Torah, which is the meaning of our life, and the reason that Eretz Yisrael was given to us. Vayvi'enu el ha-makom hazeh, v'yiten lanu es ha'aretz hazus eretz zavas chalav u'dvash. Hashem has brought us to this land, He's given us this land, the land flowing with milk and honey. V'yata hinei hevesi es reshiz priya ha'adama, asher nosata li Hashem, and now behold, I brought the first fruit of the land, which God has given to me, and you set it down before Hashem your God, and worship before Hashem your God. Sifrei writes on this, that when the Torah says that Hashem brought us to this place, this refers to the Beis HaMikdash, when the Torah says that Hashem has given us the land, this means that because we go to the Mikdash, the residing place of the Torah, the land was given to us. We see clearly that the land was given to us for the sake of the Torah, and the Bikurim which are offered in the Mikdash, the location of the Torah, is a symbolic expression of our life's aim, the fulfillment of the Torah. The ideal time to bring Bikurim is from Shavuos through Sukkos, but as long as there is grain and fruit to be brought in, the mitzvah still applies, and this lasts until Hanukkah time. Since the main time is between Shavuos and Sukkos, the Bikurim declaration is only recited during this specific period. The second aspect of bringing Bikurim is Vidui Meiser, which is a declaration in the Mikdash that the Jewish farmer has fulfilled all the commandments referring to the various types of Meiser. Before Vidui Meiser can be said, one needs to make sure that all the tithes that are associated with that specific type of produce have been properly settled, and this includes Truma, Trumas Meiser, Meiser Rishon, and Meiser Ani. Now, Meiser Sheni, Bikurim and Netta Revai, had to be eaten in Yerushalayim, and if one was not in the city by the deadline, meaning before Pesach, in the fourth or seventh year of the seven-year cycle, then they would need to be destroyed. Only once all these obligations have been carried out could the farmer recite Vidui Meiser in the Mikdash on the last day of Pesach, where he would say that he has removed all Kodesh from his house. Diane Grunfeld now discusses some of the ideas behind Meiser. Just as the Pesach Haggadah presents us with an exposition of the solemn declaration to be made in connection with the first fruits, so does the Mishnah contain a detailed and moving explanation of the Vidui Meiser described in Devarim. The explanation of the Mishnah not only refers to the various kinds of tithes, but also to Leket, Shicha, Peah, and Challah. The farmer would include in his Vidui Meiser that he has not eaten of the tithe in impurity, nor while mourning, nor had he used anything of the proceeds of the tithe for the needs of the dead, such as a shroud or a coffin. Because the holy joy of living in the presence of God was the key note of these proceedings, nothing said should mar the occasion. The Vidui Meiser was, as the Mishnah tells us, terminated by the remarkable phrase, Samachti V'simachti, I have rejoiced and made others to rejoice. A sublime summing up of the blessed life of a faithful Jew. It is remarkable that the whole legislation of the Torah concludes with the two solemn declarations to be made in the sanctuary in Yerushalayim, right? The only two mitzvos after this mitzvah are Ksiva Sefer Torah and Hakel, which are different sort of mitzvos. Those are educational. They are the declaration at the beginning of the first fruits, Mikra Bikurim, and the approval that all prescribed tithes have been faithfully given to whom they were due, Vidoy Meiser. The legal institution themselves to which these declarations refer, that is, the offering of Bikurim and the giving of Meiser, had been legislated upon before. The timing of these two declarations before the Bnei Yisrael entered the Promised Land can be easily understood. There must, however, be a deeper reason for the fact that these two declarations were made the copestone of the biblical legislation. A copestone is like a finishing touch. A summary of the underlying meaning and purpose of the legal institutions of the offering of Bikurim and the giving of various kinds of Meiser, as well as the solemn declarations to be made in the sanctuary concerning them, will provide us with that reason. The first tithe, Meiser Rishon, which was due every year, had to be given by the farmer to the Levi who cared for the spiritual welfare of the nation. The second tithe, Meiser Sheni, which was due every first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the seven-year cycle, had to be eaten by the owner in the vicinity of the sanctuary in Yerushalayim, either the actual food, or as food which was bought in Yerushalayim from the redemption money of the original fruits. Meiser Ani, which took the place of Meiser Sheni every third and sixth year, was to be given to the poor and needy. There was therefore a three-yearly rotation of tithes, which was meant to teach the principles of using our wealth to care for our spiritual life, our material welfare, and our love for our fellow men. The two declarations to be made are of a different character and purpose. The first declaration, referring to the first fruits, give us an insight into the importance the Torah attaches to the historic consciousness of the Jew, which aims at what has rightly been called the hallowing of history. This declaration also stresses the role the Holy Land plays in the legislation of the Torah, as well as in the religious outlook of Judaism as a philosophy of life. The priest and the farmer who offered up the first fruits jointly held them and waved them in all directions. This wavening movement, tenufa, which is the technical term for it, was also made with other offerings. It was a horizontal movement away from oneself and towards oneself in all four directions, molech umevi, as well as an up and down movement, ma'ale umorid. Even in our days, we know that kind of movement because it is made with the lulav and esrog, the myrtle, and the willow of the brook on Sukkos. There is a deep symbolic significance in these wavings. The movement away from ourselves in all directions and then towards ourselves symbolizes the ethical value of give and take and the fact that selfishness in the enjoyment of one's own good is rejected. The up and down movements is intended to express that it is God who grants us all earthly things and we are only trustees of this wealth and must use it for the good of our fellow men. Yerushalayim and the Mikdash, where these movements took place, are considered the center of the universe, and the movements in all directions of the globe express the universal idea of Judaism. The real significance of the second declaration, Vidoy Meiser, which is mainly concerned with Meiser Sheni, could only be grasped if we briefly refer again to what we have said before about its inner meaning. To make eating and the enjoyment of part of our harvest in Yerushalayim within the purview of the temple, a fundamental religious act can only mean that Judaism affirms a philosophy of life which considers the satisfaction of our senses within the framework of the moral law as the beginning of all higher spiritual life. That is why Meiser Sheni must not be eaten in Tuma, in impurity, as the latter symbolizes the absence of moral freedom in man. Meiser Sheni may also not be eaten while one is in mourning, Aninus, which interrupts the joy of life, a necessary characteristic of the Jewish ideal of man. True fear of God and true fear of life always go together. So that was, at least in the last part, a quote from Rav Hirsch. Okay, so continuing, over time, the idea of Meiser was applied not just to produce, but also to income and financial assets, in that it is customary for every Jew to donate one-tenth of his income to the poor. And it's also been the custom to record a person's earnings and the percentage of those earnings into a book, and these are known as Meiser books. We see that the tzedakah that we give owes a lot of its ideas to the Meiser mitzvah that is commanded in the Torah. And to wit, I just want to read a story from the famous book entitled Our Crowd. And this is a book which is about how the original German Jews came to America and made their fortunes. And you would recognize many of the names in the book. They're really big, well-known names. And none of them were, unfortunately, none of them were Orthodox, with the exception of one who, while he wasn't Orthodox, he kept certain things through his life. And this is the famous philanthropist Jacob Schiff. And if you're unfamiliar with him, it's definitely worth your time to look him up or read the book Our Crowd, which will give you some understanding into a very different sort of lifestyle. It's eye-opening in many ways, and it's very sad how all these individuals really lost their Judaism. But coming back to the point, one of the practices that was ingrained into Jacob Schiff was giving Meiser, and here's what the book says about it. So this book is written by Stephen Birmingham, who's not a Jewish person. He, Jacob Schiff, had always believed in the principle of tzedakah, the charity which literally means justice. During his youth in Germany, he recalled, kindliness was the keynote of the household, and from the first 10-pfennig piece that was received as an allowance, it was made our duty to put one-tenth aside for charity, according to the old Jewish tradition. He had continued this 10% tithing system throughout his life, and, though he was called one of New York's foremost philanthropists, he insisted that only what he had given above and beyond this figure could be considered philanthropy. He once startled a well-meaning woman who congratulated him on a particularly large gift by saying somewhat abruptly, "That wasn't my money." He meant, of course, that the gift came from the one-tenth of his income that he felt had to be given away. So that's just a quick vignette of how Meiser has really seeped into the Jewish people over time. So this ends Shir 38. And next time we will, be'ezras Hashem, begin a series of lectures on our final mitzvos, which are Shemitah and Yovel.